bij de derde.
Wie mee? Who's gay?
It's inside me. He's inside me. And he wants to take me again.
What's the matter? Can I get your ghost ball?
Oh, mama, mama, mama.
I feel so scrumptious.
Hey, creeps. Welcome to Not Another Queer Horror Podcast. My name is Trevor, otherwise known as Christian Mingle, and I am so excited for today's episode. Joining me today, I have the host of Single Fat Mom Performing, Miss Kitty Devereaux. She and I jump into the queer horror classic Jennifer's Body. Now, before you skip on to the next episode thinking you're going to hear the same old discourse about old Jen's body, Kitty and I actually looked at a few different things this time around. I really wanted to speak to Kitty about her experience as a mother as it pertains to some of the elements in the film, and I think we learned some pretty interesting things about Miss Devereaux, Mama Bear Devereaux. So please enjoy this interview with Kitty. Please enjoy Jennifer's Body if you haven't or haven't in a while. And let's get right into it. Okay, so today we are joined by my good friend Kathy, otherwise known as Kitty Devereaux. Kitty and I know each other from our days in the Philadelphia burlesque scene. That's how we met. We both performed with the same burlesque troupe and instantly fell in love because, I don't know, I think it's one of those soulmate connections. Just as soon as you meet someone, you feel that, like, I don't know, I see you, I get you, I feel you, and it's, I feel like it's been like that from the jump with me and you, so I really am so grateful to have you on. Kitty is currently the host of her own podcast. Let me make sure I get it in the right order. It is Single Fat Mom Performing, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, right on. Cool. So if you can't tell from the title, Kitty talks about her experiences being a single person in the dating world, talks about her experiences as a person who identifies as fat, because both of us are big, beautiful women. That is how we met, doing stripping for the big, beautiful people. And she is a mother of two, which we're going to talk extensively about today. And she, beat this horse to death at this point. We're performing. Here we are. So to start us off, Kitty, I like to always ask my guests to give us a little self-identification. That way the listeners have a better understanding of your perspective and where you're coming from, but also so I know I am addressing you properly. So I'll go first. I am a gender non-conforming, cis white, pansexual, queer male. The pronouns that I typically go by are he, him, but really any pronoun works for me. That might have been a little bit of a revelation to you. Did I tell you that I'm pansexual now? Did you know that?
Somebody else told me that, but go ahead.
Yes, mama. Whatever you got, put it in my mouth. I'm here for it. We'll talk more about that off air. But okay, so yeah, I forgot I haven't seen you since that development. Mm-hmm. All right. So anyway, Kitty, please go for it.
First of all, I know everything. No, I'm kidding.
Yes, you do.
My pronouns are she, her. I am a single Puerto Rican lady of the night. Mother. That's pretty much, you know, I'm bisexual. I'm fat. I'm a bitch, you know. I'm sassy, you know, whatever. I'm all those things.
I love it. You're everything that I love. Those are all the things, like, check every box. Check. That's all I'm looking for. Okay. I mean, honestly, the only thing, rather, I wouldn't be able to do with the kids. So I applaud you immensely for that.
Sometimes I can't do it with the kids.
Honey. listen to the pod to find out all about all that. I love hearing all your unedited feelings about your life and your perspective. It's so great. And also, I have to say, this is a random thought, but the music you choose to put in the background, just like, sets such a vibe that feels so appropriately you. I can't describe besides that. Obviously, like, I'm stoned, so like that's just me trying to get, but I just, once I listened to your first episode and the background music you had, I was like, this is just like taking me back very like
90s, you know, like, yes, R&B.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I try to go with. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's perfect. I love it. I was walking around South Philly listening to it, just like feeling it.
Yes.
Okay, anyway, we're already off on tangents. So the final thing I like to ask my guests is as a means of introduction is, what is your connection to horror?
I've been watching horror films since I was a child because I have a cousin who's like 8 years older than me, but when we were growing up, her and I were very much like sisters almost. We were always together, right? So with somebody being that much older than you, you know, she taught me about MTV, she taught me about horror movies. So she had me at like 4 years old watching Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, Halloween, all those things. So she was really like my introduction to it. And I was watching inappropriate shit at 4 or 5 years old. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do know what you mean. As someone who discovered porn at the age of like, I think 7 or 8.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
I didn't discover porn, but it was definitely horror, and, you know, and like, because, you know, when you have somebody that's like a sister or an older sibling figure or whatever, you kind of look up to them. So everything that she did, I wanted to do, yeah. You know? So yeah, if she was watching MTV, I was watching MTV with her. If she was watching a scary movie, I needed to watch that scary movie with her. And then it like just transitioned into me watching it by myself. So, you know, late at night in the 90s, they had like the Tales from the Crypt. You know?
Yes,
that,
absolutely.
Right? With like the puppet and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I would watch that.
I was that little crypt keeper character for Halloween in, I think, like kindergarten. There's a picture of me.
Are you
like
serious?
I swear to God, I'm next to my little best friend of like, it was either kindergarten or preschool because we were little kids, and she's dressed up as Princess Jasmine, and here I am as the crypt keeper. Yes. A little monster, a little freak.
That's amazing. Yeah, so I would like watch that stuff. Are You Afraid of the Dark was another one I would always watch. Yes, you know,
I hear they're bringing that back. I think
they are, but I watch, they have the old episodes on one of the apps. Yes. And I watch the old episodes sometimes because I'm nostalgic like that.
Absolutely. And they were scary as shit.
At that point they were, but I used to watch those. I used to watch Alfred Hitchcock and Twilight Zone. They used to come on like at Nick at night, like at the late night.
Right, yes.
When I was younger. Mm-hmm. So when I would stay up when I was younger, I had my own TV in my bedroom because the TV taught me, you know, parented me. So I would stay up late at night and watch like all those old black and white films and stuff like that. So I've just been into all of it. And to this day, no horror movie really scares me like The Exorcist. The Exorcist is the only one that I can't.
Wow,
really,
okay.
Yeah. And that's because I grew up Catholic. So, you know, when you grow up Catholic, it fucks with you to begin with. And then throw some demon devil shit in there. It's like, I swear to God, after I watched The Exorcist, that my bed was shaking for at least a week. Like, I was like that person. And my grandmother was getting so pissed at me because I would scream about it.
I'm
like, my bed's shaking!
Possession stuff has never gotten me, even though I was raised Catholic. My dad was terrified of The Exorcist, but he buys into that.
So scared.
A lot more than I do. I'm more, the things that get me these days are like home invasion stuff, like stuff that could like actually happen, like realistically.
Let me just tell you that I wish a motherfucker would. I have a built-up aggression. Let me just say, that's a built-up aggression in me. And I would just say it to my aunt the one day, especially when I'm like on the rag, you know, I get extra fucked up, right? So I was just telling my aunt the other day, I was like, I wish a motherfucker would even try because that would be my only time to really fuck somebody up.
That's real.
And get it out.
Yep.
And have it be completely legal because why are you in my house? Yeah, you know what I mean?
Like, you know what? That's a good point, dude. And I totally see you on that. I live in a studio, so it's like four corners, but I literally have a weapon in every corner of this place.
Yeah, dude.
You know, I'd be having people come through here that I don't really know that well.
Shake,
or at all.
Shake, right?
Ow. The bed here is shaking, but not because it's possessed.
I don't have like weapons. I mean, I know where things are in my house, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I definitely have like, I think to myself sometimes, if anybody tried to fuck with me in this room, this is what I would do, or this is what I would
use. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like, I have those thoughts, but yeah, no, I wish a motherfucker would. Let's go, because I'm ready.
You know? Uh-oh.
Stay
away from Kitty's house because she's prepared.
Me.
No, you know what? That is one of the many things that you and I can connect on, because I I think I've always had that fantasy ever since I was a kid. Like, even though I'm terrified of it, I like the same thing. I know that if someone were ever to like attack me in my home or really just in general,
anywhere,
I
can
kind of like go back at them, you know, and like not worry about it.
They would regret it big time. They'd get a big ass fight. They'd be like, man, this bitch is too much.
Bitch. They sure would.
It's not worth it.
Unless they're like, here goes my dumb ass. If they're hot enough, I'd be like, wait now.
Wait a minute.
Just, like, you want to like take a break real quick and maybe just like see what happens.
Shut up. I can't with you.
When we're off air, I'll tell you. Remind me to tell you about my bus stop story, girl.
Oh Jesus! All right, let's go.
This is why I have weapons. All right, let's get into this movie. Okay.
Okay.
So, what did we watch? We watched Jennifer's Body from 2009. This is a queer horror classic at this point, despite the fact that it's still a relatively new film. It was written by Diablo Cody and directed by Karen Kusama. So we have two females. I believe they both identify as female. Sorry if I'm wrong. Behind this film. So it's great because when I remember seeing previews for this film when I was in college, and at that point in time, Megan Fox was like just out of the Transformers fame, and she was just kind of this like new age sex symbol. So I was like, oh, that's probably some like stupid bro horror film about like some hot bitch getting naked or being hot. I don't know. And it's like totally not that.
Yeah.
So what is it? Let's get into the summary and find out. So we have Anita Needy Lesnicki, played by Amanda Seyfried, and Jennifer Check, played by Megan Fox. They have been best friends since childhood, and the movie picks up and they're in high school, and you can just see that they have that like lifetime friend connection. Needy says, I think something like sandbox love is forever or something like that. So they just have this kind of like ride or die ness about them, in a very, you know, white girl way. So one night, Jennifer tells Needy she wants to go check out this new band, Low Shoulder, because she thinks that the lead singer, Nikolai, is super hot. What does she call him? Crispy or something like that? I think she called
something like that. Yeah. Salty.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
They have very interesting like slang in this film.
Which doesn't even make any sense to me, but whatever. When she said it, I thought she meant he was mad, you know?
It's like, 2009 though, Salty had it involved, you know? I thought it was still tasty Salty. So anyway, Jennifer drags Needy along to some bar, and for whatever reason, at 17, they're able to get into a bar. Oh, but they get the X on the hand, so like, you know, whatever.
They do, yeah, that's
true. So they go to this bar, see this band. Nikolai appears to be interested in Jennifer because he thinks that she's a virgin. And we think, you know, right off the bat, oh, this is like some creepy guy here to prey on like some underage girl, gross. But of course she's obsessed with him. They start playing music and she looks like she's like totally entranced by him, which she actually is, we find out. While they are performing, a fire starts and the entire little dive bar goes up. It's like literally like three bars into the first song and it's like, bam, fire shows over. Everyone, you know, obviously evacuates. Some people unfortunately do die in the fire, and Jennifer is lured into Low Shoulder's van, despite Needy saying, but we have the Sebring. Sorry, this movie is so quotable for me, so you're gonna have to deal with a lot of that.
Oh my god.
But yeah, so they take her into the van. Needy goes home in her Sebring. And and later that night, Jennifer shows up at Needy's house looking like what we assume happened to her. She's like beaten and bruised and bloody. You know, it looks like, unfortunately, that she might have been like raped or something. So, but she's totally out of it. She starts to eat a rotisserie chicken. This, from the first time I saw it, is my favorite moment in this whole movie. When Jennifer eats the rotisserie. I don't know why, but like, so Jennifer is, she's acting very kind of like animal-like, almost like feral monster animal kind of. So she's like hunched over a little bit. She goes into the refrigerator, starts tearing shit out, and then grabs this rotisserie chicken and starts like eating it on the floor, like hunched over, almost like a cave person or something.
See, I like when she throws up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she tries to eat this chicken, and this is why I love this. Because Needy says, my mom got that from Boston Market, and supposed to. And Jennifer just like roars at her to like cut her off, and then throws up. I don't. I don't know if that was in the script or if that was an improvised line, but that line from the moment I saw this movie always gets me. My mom got that from Boston. I guess like it makes sense. She was just like totally shocked and terrified. She doesn't even know what to say, but like so funny. Jennifer throws up after eating the chicken and then kind of like pins Needy against the wall and scares her, but then takes off. And so Needy's just left to clean up this gross puke. Like, what the fuck just happened? The next day, news has broken around school about what went on at the bar and all this fire and all these deaths. And the band Low Shoulder is now being seen as like heroes because a story has been spread that they like
because they lied.
Yeah, they got people. They helped like get people out of the building and brought them to safety. The one character says at one point, "It's on their Wikipedia page." So yeah. Okay,
it's true. It's on Wikipedia.
Yeah. So everyone seems really like heartbroken by this. Jennifer is laughing about a lot of it though. And then later on, after school, Jennifer finds this boy Jonas, what like a jock who's like, you know, silent or what the hell word am I looking for? Sorry, I'm stumped. He's just like by himself, crying, like, you know, having a little like tough guy morning moment.
Yes, he was upset.
Yeah, he was upset because one of his like his best friend died in the fire. So Jennifer goes up to him and she's like, "Oh, Craig totally thought that we should get together. He thought we'd be like such a hot couple or whatever."
Which is like, why would that be his last words? I don't know, whatever. Yeah. That doesn't make no damn sense.
I know. So Jennifer lures Jonas into the woods where she starts kissing him and then ultimately attacks him and kills him. And like disembowels him and I guess eats pieces of him. They later describe him as looking like lasagna with teeth. Gross. So now not only does this town have this horrible fire tragedy that caused many deaths, now there's also a teenager boy, a child who's been murdered like brutally. So the town and the school are mourning all these deaths, but Jennifer seems to be like living her best life. And we start to see that she's learning that she has these new abilities, specifically the ability to heal. In the iconic scene from the film, she lights her tongue on fire and it just like right away heals. So Jennifer is just like killing it literally and everyone else is having a terrible time. But a month later, Jennifer is no longer killing it. She's looking really rough. And we come to find out that it's been a month since she last fed and therefore she's starting to look get weakened. Her skin looks gross. So she agrees to a date with this emo kid, Colin, who is my personal number one crush of this film. Colin is so cute. And I always had a thing for
that.
Like,
yeah.
The little emo punk boy is like, "Oh, why don't you love me?" So she agrees to go on a date with him so that way she can also kill and eat him. And then she like refreshes herself. So Needy is starting to kind of pick up on what's going on with Jennifer. She seems to have like almost a psychic connection to her because when Jennifer kills Colin, Needy can kind of like see it and feel it in a way. And then she later sees Jennifer leaving the scene of Colin's murder covered in blood. So she's like, something is fucking going on. When she gets home, Jennifer is there, like, you know, magically appeared all cleaned up and looking hot again. And Jennifer begins to seduce Needy. They make out for like a little bit. It gets kind of hot. And then Needy kind of like cuts it short because she's freaking out. So she demands an explanation to what's going on. So Jennifer explains to her what happened after she left with Low Shoulder the night of the fire. So we get a flashback scene of Low Shoulder taking her out to the woods where they brutally sacrifice her. And like, it's like, kind of a silly scene because they're singing 8675309 Jenny I Got Your Number, so like that's kind of funny because like, oh, you know, it's a silly fun song and they're murdering someone, but it's really like, it's a rough scene, and in many ways it's supposed to be like, it's obviously meant to represent a rape scene, like they're, you know, repeatedly taking turns penetrating her while she's like tied down and screaming. It's like, it's rough. But they chose Jennifer, as we said earlier, because they assumed she was a virgin, but it turns out she's not. She's not even a backdoor virgin, we find out in the beginning of the film. And so since she wasn't a virgin, despite the fact that their sacrifice was successful in getting them music fame and whatnot, Jennifer didn't die. She actually became possessed by some sort of demon. That's where she gets these abilities to, like, you know, re-heal after she feeds on boys. So she says that she had intended to, or I don't know if she says or if it's implied, but basically when she came to Needy's house that first night and realized she couldn't eat the chicken, she was going to eat Needy, but, you know, restrained herself from doing it. And then she ended up finding a foreign exchange student named Ahmet, who was at the at the bar and managed to escape the fire. So she killed him, and then everyone just assumed he died in the fire. So that's where we start to kind of get, or that's where we get the, you know, background of what the hell's going on with Jennifer and what's happening now. So now that we have established this issue, Needy is worried that Jennifer is going to be going after her Needy's boyfriend, Chip. So Needy breaks up with him and tries to kind of distance herself from him. That way, maybe that'll throw Jennifer off. But obviously, that's not that, even saying that, that plan doesn't make sense. So Jennifer... The night of prom, Jennifer catches Chip outside before he makes it into the prom building where Needy's waiting for him, and she leads him to an abandoned, like, pool building, I guess. Like
pool, yeah.
Yeah, they must have, like, an old pool back in the day or whatever at the school. So she begins to feed on him, but Needy, through her, like, psychic link, you know, figures out where they're at and discovers them and interrupts the, like, feeding process. During this time, Chip impales Jennifer with, like, a pool skimmer. And so she flees. She survives because she's still, like, you know, a demon or whatever the fuck. But Chip dies. And this is, like, a little bit of, I don't know if it's tea, but when I showed one of my ex-boyfriends this movie, he cried at this part. He was like, I would be so sad if I found you, like, eaten or whatever. I'm like, girl, it's not going to happen. So get over it. Anyway.
I did not cry during this movie.
Yeah, no tears were shed.
No tears.
So Needy then tracks Jennifer down at her home. She's in a weakened state because she hasn't fed, so she is vulnerable to, like, not being able to survive certain attacks. So they get into a fight. They end up, like, floating in the air, very, like, Exorcist style. And Needy stabs Jennifer in the heart. another one of my favorite lines. She stabs Jennifer, and Jennifer goes, "My tit."
My titty.
So she stabs and kills Jennifer. Jennifer's mother discovers them. Needy gets sent away. And then we find out that during the fight, Jennifer bit Needy and therefore, like, transferred the possession or, like, some of the powers onto Needy. So now Needy is, like, super strong, super violent, also, like, kind of hot. There's a bit of, like, a transformation in how she looks after she's possessed, but, you know, whatever. And then the movie ends with Needy breaking out of jail or the asylum that she's held at, hitchhiking to a low shoulder show, and then murdering the band in the hotel room with the same knife they used to kill Jennifer. And that is our film, Jennifer's Body.
Credits.
There it is, baby. Blackout. That's it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fade to black. Fade to black. All right. So before we get into these topics, I want to discuss just kind of like a quick little review from you, Kitty. How'd you feel about this one? You said this is your second time seeing it.
It was my second time seeing it. I saw it when it first came out, and, like, when was that? I mean,
2009.
Yeah, so there you go. I saw it then, and then I watched it, you know, because I knew we were going to be talking about it. I don't know. I mean, it's okay. Like, so obviously, it's not my favorite because I've only seen it twice now.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I think it's a little cheesy, but it's very, you know, early 90s, you know, which is cute.
Early 90s, bitch. It's 2009.
Early 2000s. Sorry. My bad. Early 2000s, especially with, like, the clothes that they're wearing and stuff. It was very nostalgic for me.
Early 2000s.
I was like, I remember
clothes.
Wearing shit like that, yep. You know?
All the, like, weird unnecessary layers. Like,
all unnecessary layers. Like, even when she came out with, like, those heart earrings and then, like, the matching heart sweater. Yes. And I was like, oh, I think I might have had something like that too.
Yeah.
So, and the lip gloss, you know,
and the music. Very,
yeah,
that,
the,
like,
music
emo-y
too.
Emo-y punk music that was very that era, very, like, Fall Out Boy, whatever.
Yes. So
which I just
love
because that's hot.
Yeah. So all that was nostalgic for me, but it's okay. Like, if I had to give it a rating from to 10, I'd give it, like, a 6.
Okay, that's fair.
Probably be my rating.
Yeah, this movie definitely tends to be a bit divisive. Some people really love it. It definitely has a big cult queer following. I mean, there's the obvious stuff of, like, the bisexual / like lesbian stuff between Needy and Jennifer, but it just, I think, because of its camp factor. I mean, like, me as a gay, well, now I'm pansexual, but, you know, that's a different story. But, like, me as, you know, a queer guy, I love it, not for like the sexual element, but just for all of the really zany shit they say, like, as I've, you know, already done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. So with this podcast, I try to pair movies with my guests, not necessarily based on what I think you'll like. I didn't know that if whether or not you would love this one, but because I want to connect it to things that I know that you have an interesting insight into, and I want to kind of like pick your brain.
Let's go.
While still reviewing the film. Mm-hmm. All right. So since this is a queer pod, we'll start with the queer stuff. I don't want to do too much time on this because I feel like at this point, the queer stuff of Jennifer's body has probably been beaten to death. I really want to focus on the parental stuff with you. But as someone who identifies as bisexual, I did kind of want to discuss that. So both girls in the film, Needy has a boyfriend. You hear about a few of Jennifer's exes. So it's clear that they're interested in and sleep with men. But they also have this very obvious sexual tension and attraction to one another. That's where we're getting this kind of, you know, bisexual vibes. And I think that exploration of sexuality is so common. Well, this may be ignorant, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it's much more common among female friends than it is among male friends. So what's your take on the whole idea of like sexual exploration among friends? And if it's not too personal to ask, is that kind of how it started for you? Like, what was your experience getting into your exploring your sexuality?
Absolutely not. I have like a hard, and I've always been this way. Now think about it. I mean, being any part of LGBTQ when we were growing up, when I was younger, was not like socially acceptable. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I was, and I knew that I was bisexual as soon as puberty hit. You know what I mean? Like, as soon as puberty hit and I could watch Skinamax, I knew that I enjoyed the women more than I enjoyed the men. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
So I knew that this was true about me, but I also knew that it would being, again, I was, you know, I grew up Catholic. I even went to Catholic school for a long time. So mm-hmm. being in that, and then also being Puerto Rican, you know, a lot of these things are like frowned upon already. It's like I'm indoctrinated to like not be like this, you know?
Right, yeah.
So that always stuck with me. And because that always stuck with me, I always made it a point not to like any of my girlfriends. So like my friend, because I never wanted it to ever come back to be like, oh, was Kathy looking at me weird when I was in the shower? Was Kathy, you know, I never wanted any of them to feel like I was checking them out. You know what I'm saying? Like, because I guess maybe in the back of my mind at some point I knew it was gonna come out that I like girls and I didn't want any of my friends to ever, you know, talk behind my back and be like, oh, remember when we had the sleepover? I thought she was looking at me weird. I thought that, you know, oh my God. Like, I never wanted that. I remember there was like, what movie was it? I think it was Mean Girls that came out and they were talking. And the one girl was talking about how like they had a pool party and they didn't invite the one girl because they thought she was a lesbian. And like, I never wanted that to be like me. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like
for
me, I never wanted to be like, we can't invite Kathy because, you know, she's this way, or I knew Kathy was going to be like that because she did this. So I always made it a point never to like any of my girls. And I never did. I never was sexually attracted to any of my girlfriends. Now, granted, I think that they're all like hot banging bitches. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I never thought that any of them were ugly. They were always beautiful to me. But you know, I definitely, you know, slept in the same beds with them and we've taken showers. And even this is before I even, you know, became out as bisexual, and I never looked at them in any way other than that's my friend.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And until this day, like all the close friends that I have that are female or, you know, female identified, whatever, I don't have any interest in looking at them that way. That's me, though.
No, that's like, I think that's a really great, I don't know if it's like, I don't know if skill is the right word, but a great habit to have developed, because for me, I completely identify with all of those concerns that you addressed about, like, you know, not wanting your friends to look at you differently and not wanting them to be afraid of you or afraid to be around you. And
or
I definitely
feel awkward.
Yeah, I definitely had that perspective in high school. One of my like most vivid memories of when I came out was I was in drama club, and one day this one guy and I were left behind. Like, our both of our moms were late to pick us up, so we're like left alone. And I was afraid to push it because I didn't want anyone talking about me, or, you know, all the things you just said. And then I later came to find out he did exactly that. And so it just kind of confirmed that that's like a thing. So that's why I spent the rest of my high school career in the drama club, surrounded by all of these closeted homos, because obviously, and I could have been fucking cleaning up, but because I was too afraid of like what they would say, I didn't pursue anything. Even when I was in so many situations that I was like, you could have done something there. They were trying to make a move there. This is like, you don't think about it in the moment, especially when you're that young, if you're not experienced. But now looking back, I was like, I had all these opportunities that I just didn't take because I was too afraid and I didn't know any better, you know?
What I found fascinating, like younger, I mean, before I even came out, is the people that pegged me as like lesbian. I found that fascinating because I tried so hard to consciously not have anybody know that I liked girls, you know? I thought I did, you know what I mean? Like, I thought I was hiding it. Uh-huh. But I mean, you know, I was definitely, you know, I had friends that were lesbians, that were open lesbian, you know? And I can remember like some of them being like, Kathy's one of us. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know how they do this, but they do this. You know, and obviously I'm not full lesbian, but I'm not a lesbian, I'm bisexual. But yeah, I mean, I had people peg me before I even told
anyone. Yeah, no, I think it's just like an energy that people put out. I'll never forget this conversation. When I was a high school teacher still, I ran a gay straight alliance, and this was around the time when like trans was becoming a more well-known word, but still was kind of very like even more ambiguous than it is now to people. So I had a trans friend from college who I invited to come in and speak to the kids and just like talk about his experience. And he said that when he was still presenting as female, he would have interactions with other female presenting cis female AFAB folks who would find themselves attracted to him the way they were attracted to men. And when he discussed that with his therapist said, it's not always about what's on the outside. It's like this, just that natural energy that you kind of like put out and that people pick up on. Yeah, exactly. Because I did the same thing. I tried to act butch and stuff when I was like not sure of myself. Cut to me in fucking middle school and early high school wearing FUBU. And like, this is during the era of like the white thug, like Eminem's like height of popularity. I definitely wore a FUBU shirt in one of my the yearbook photos. I mean, I will say that was because of my brother. He was really into that kind of like aesthetic. So he had all of that stuff, and I just kind of inherited the hand-me-downs. But I was like, oh, well, he's like a super straight dude. So he wears this. If I wear this, no one will know. You can't hide the fairy no matter how big those O5s are on your chest. Mm. All right. Well, let's move on then, because you and I can probably talk about our sexuality for days. So I want to talk about the stuff that I was really interested in getting you on the pod to discuss. And that's your perspective as a parent. I don't have many friends in my life these days more and more are becoming parents. But what's really unique about your perspective is you are a parent to a teenage boy. He is 18 now?
He's 19.
Oh, shit, he's 19. Oh,
I know.
So he's 19, and then your daughter is 2?
3.
3, okay. I'm a year off COVID, baby. Okay.
No, that's okay.
So they
had birthdays. It's all right. It just happened.
Are you cool with us using their names?
Yeah, it's Mason.
Mason and Ruby, okay.
Yeah, and Mason and Ruby, yeah. But their birthdays were January, February, so they just, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I was more or less there.
Mm, you're right, yeah.
Okay. So you have raised a young man at this point, but are still, you know, continuing to raise him because 19 is still a child, despite the fact that, you know, society wants to tell us otherwise. Yeah. and you are now freshly raising a new child who we were discussing before we started recording is a full-on person now running around and having an opinion and everything. Mm-hmm. So first I want to talk about your perspective as the mother of a teenage boy, because quite often
it sucks. Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
I would love to hear it all unfiltered, but I want to focus this on the movie because I know you go forever. That's why. Check out Kitty's pod if you want to hear all of those thoughts. But so typically in horror, we see teenage girls as victims. They're often, and then that kind of translates into life. We're often always concerned about what's going to happen to our teenage daughter, you know, protect them from the boys, da 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 da. But we don't often really see the perspective of mothers being concerned for their son's physical safety when it comes to dating and women. You know, maybe in terms of like what kind of boys are you hanging out with or what's like your lifestyle socially, you might be concerned there. But we don't often get portrayals of mothers concerned about boys regarding their interaction with women. Mm-hmm. So one of my favorite moments in this film is when Chip's mom, I think it's where he goes to prom, gives him pepper spray, but it's like a pink lady pepper spray like they sell. So it's just like they're really emphasizing that this, you know, the mothers are concerned about the boys because all the victims have been boys. So what... concerns, if any, or what's your perspective been regarding Mason and his interaction with, I don't want to really get into his sexuality, but more so just specifically when it comes to dating, what's your concerns about that for him?
Well, let me just say that I've always been a paranoid mother from the day he was born, right? Mm-hmm. I would tap him at night in the bed to make sure he was still breathing and he was like, you know, 3 weeks old. You know what I'm saying? Like he'd wake up, you know, so I've always been a paranoid mother. And because I've always been a paranoid mother, I've always been, my parenting style with him has always been to give him some fear.
Okay.
to not get himself in situations that could be messed up. So like so I'm kind of like the opposite, like how you were saying how people are afraid of their daughters. I was afraid for Mason from day one, you know? So, and I was also very conscious, you know, I don't know how to get the background of this, but basically there was somebody that I grew up with that later came out to be a child molester and he would only molest boys. Right. Okay. So, and because I knew who this person was and I knew that he only molested boys, it kind of stuck with me. And so when Mason was younger, and I'm talking about like 3-4 years old, I would tell him, not necessarily get into detail, but I'd be you can't go with anybody because they'll do bad things to you and they'll throw you in the river. You know, I would give him this child's vision of it just so that he'd be a little afraid to like talk to strangers and things like that. So then as he got older, I mean, Mason, I can just tell you right now, Mason identifies as straight.
I figured about it.
Super disappointing, but whatever.
Hey, you know what? He's still young. He's got plenty of time. Look at me. I'm 33, and now I'm like, you know, spreading my wings. So we'll see.
I mean, he dates girls and stuff. And you know, it's funny that you asked me this because just this past weekend, I kid you not, I had this conversation with him about girls, because he has there was a girl he was dating for a few months, right? And you know, that was his girlfriend, maybe like 6 months or so, but they've broken up. So now he's like in that phase of like he just wants to go with any girl, you know. So you know how that after breakup phase is, you know, where you just want to date, you know, not necessarily date.
I've been in that for like the past 3 years. So yeah, like... I got you.
So he met some girls on, I don't even know where the fuck he met them. Like, I have no idea. Like,
did you know he's probably on Tinder?
Yeah, I mean, wherever. And like, he's 19. So like, I can't really pry too much about it. Like, if he gives it to me, he gives it to me. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't, he doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
But he met some girls. And now I just want to also, you know, reiterate that, you know, I'm Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. That means Mason is Puerto Rican. And Mason has a good friend who is black, right? So he was telling me that these two girls, and I hate to get into race, but these two girls are white.
We want the facts.
You know, these two girls are white, and they were going to go away with them for the overnight, like someplace camping or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And they were going to be the only two young people of color, right? So this triggered me, and I'm like, okay, you're going to go somewhere where, like, you're camping, you don't really know anybody, you just met these people, and then let's throw in the fact that you're the only Puerto Rican and Black kid there, you know?
Yeah.
At least that's, I don't know if that's how it ended up, I just know that that's how it was described to me from him at the moment. And I was like, I like went into like the scenarios with him, and I was like, yo, I was like, you gotta be careful because you don't know what's gonna happen, you know, you don't know these kids, you're gonna be far away, you know? And like, I was like, just make sure you watch your back, watch your friend's back. Even like when his friend was leaving, I was like, I even said to him, I was like, yo, be careful. Like,
yeah, no,
you know,
I was like, be careful.
Yeah, because, but not only that, because, of, you know, I mean, you hear all these stories now, like there was some guy who was like the only Black man at a party with coworkers, and the coworkers shot him, you know?
Yes.
And then they
got
away with it.
Oh my God, yes.
You know?
There's too many stories like that. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, like, and then I don't, you know, Queen of Hearts. Queen was telling me, because I was telling her about this too, you know, and I was like, am I paranoid to feel this way? And Queen was like, absolutely not. She's like, you know, that she was telling me that about another woman that was like at a sleepover, and she was the only Black woman at a sleepover, and she got, and she was,
yes,
killed.
That's the one that I knew.
So yeah, so like, I was like, okay, so I gotta warn him about it. And it's funny because he thought it was like funny, because you know you're like 19, and
you
so,
have that,
you know,
invisibility complex.
Everything's a fucking joke. Nothing's gonna happen to me until it fucking does happen to me.
Yes.
You know? So he's like, ah, mom, you're being stupid, this and that, you know, whatever. But I was like, no, I'm not being stupid. If I had pepper spray, I would have given it to him.
Yes, take this pink pepper spray. Okay, so the next thing I wanted to discuss with you from your parental perspective is I want to flip it now to your daughter, Ruby. Now, this film...
What if she was eating people? Give it to you. I'd be like, yes, mama.
Yes, exactly. I wouldn't put it past her, honestly. No. So Ruby is, as we established, 3. So she's, you know, barely getting started. But, and then this film focuses on teenagers. But I wanted to kind of just get your perspective now as a newish mother of a daughter. What are any of your concerns that you might have in regards to like toxic friendships that we see so often amongst teenage girls?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, she's really young yet. Ruby has no friends.
Ruby right, has not friends. Now, but have you ever thought about this, having experienced life as a teenage girl yourself?
I haven't really thought about her friends, honestly. I've thought more about how it's going to be, how my and her interaction is going to be as she grows up.
Oh, okay.
Because I know how I was. So I've definitely thought about that, but not really about friends. I guess it's like, the only concern I have with friends is I'm not the mother that is, your friends can come over to my house for the sleepover. Oh, your friends can, this. I'm not, my house is not the house where the friends come and chill at. And Mason can totally tell you that too. Cause I don't want to be responsible for somebody else's fucking kids.
Ugh, no way.
You know, like I'm not in the mood for all that. Like, like, so, I just know that for me that I wouldn't let her sleep over somebody else's house.
Oh, okay.
So, cause I'm paranoid of that stuff. But at the same time, I don't want them at my house. So I don't know how that's going to come out. I don't know about, you know, how my mind is going to change. Maybe like, I'm definitely the type of mother who's like, I want to know who you're, especially when they're younger, who your friend is and who their parents are, where you're going to be at, where they live at. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so I need to know all the logistics. If this is like your real friend, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm definitely going to be like that with her. But yeah, I don't trust other people, period. Especially with my child.
Yeah.
Especially with my child. And so I know that I'm not going to care how long I've known these other kids. I don't care if she starts kindergarten with this kid and her and this kid go through whatever, you know, activities they go through. And I see their parent at every single activity and blah, blah, blah. Oh, can your kid sleep over my house? Hell no, my kid cannot sleep over your house. Like, I don't care.
Well, good luck with that one, because I can only imagine how that conversation
I'm gonna be that person, but I think I'm gonna have to be a little bit more looser with her, just because of the logistics of it.
Yeah.
With her, you know, having friends over, I'm still not gonna be like the house where friends come at, but maybe she'll be able to have a friend or two, but like come over and play or whatever. But yeah, I don't beyond that, I haven't really thought about what her friendships are going to look like. Ruby, let me just tell you, is real tough already at three years old.
See, yeah.
You know what I mean? She has no problems. We were at the park the other day and she tackled some little boy because he took her ball. So she, you know, some 6-year old little boy. Her three year old ass is awesome. Running at the little boy. And she tackled this little boy because he took her ball. This little boy was like twice her size. So I have no doubt that like Ruby's going to be a tough cookie.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to be able to stand up for herself. She's going to be able to speak up for herself. I wonder where she gets that from, right? But like,
yeah. Well, that's a good quality to inherit. Let me tell
like,
you.
Yeah. So I know she's not going to be the person who is on like in this movie, for example, like Needy's end. I don't think she's going to be Needy. If anything, she might be a little Jennifer.
Okay.
But I don't think she's going to be like Needy. I don't think she's going to be an easy pushover in that sense. There's one thing I want to say actually about the movie, about the whole parenting in the movie. Because let me just tell you, I, for a long time while I was watching this movie, I was like, where the fuck are the parents?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I was like. When you told me that you want to talk about the parody, I was like, what? The fucking parents weren't there. Like, the whole, like, there was like, how many times Needy was just at home by herself? Like,
yes.
I was like, yeah, well, where are her parents?
I think the fact that we don't see the parents too often says a lot and says kind of, in a way, the reality of a lot of kids. I mean, like, I don't know about you, but for me, like, my parents were still working when I would get home from school for the most part. So like, there were a lot of times where I would kind of be on my own and like, you know, left to take care of myself. Not as much as Needy. I mean, it seems like Needy's mom is like an overnight shift worker.
She must be, because she was upstairs with her boyfriend. Ain't nobody there at night.
Yeah, and the mom's asleep during the day. Yeah, that is the, so happening. The thing I did note, you only actually see mothers in this film. Like the guy who gets like killed, I think like his dad is holding the mom when she's screaming at one point. But like,
yeah,
for the most part, the focus is always about the mother. Like when the one kid dies, they talk about how his mother reacted. We only see Needy and Jennifer's mothers. We don't see, well, Needy's dad seems to not even be present. I don't know what Jennifer's dad's deal is. But I do love the scene between Needy and her mother, played fabulously by Amy Sedaris. And that's kind
of
what...
Yes, that's who that was. I knew I recognized her.
Yeah.
I was like, who is that? Yeah.
Yeah, right. And that's what made me, like, that's what in my brain drew the connection between you and this film, because I could see you having that conversation. She says to Needy, I'm a strong, tough mama bear, or something along those lines. So I'm like, that's Kitty. But she says, I won't always be there to protect you. And that's kind of, I was like, oh, I wonder what that's like to have kids and think that, you know, because I know you, and I'm sure all the listeners at this point have gleaned that you are that tough mama bear character, and if anyone fucks with your kids, you're coming for them. But
I'm coming. I'm good. I wish a motherfucker would. Let's go. As far as plug anything, yeah. So I'm gonna be hosting Thick Bitch. Which is produced by Queen of Hearts. It's a burlesque show, basically all plus size performers, Fleur de Soleil, Penny Praline, Eyeliner. That's gonna be Thursday, May 12th at Frankie Bradley's.
Yes, I love it. Well, if you were in the Philly area on May 12th, check out Thick Bitch with all these beautiful thick bitches. And they're all
these beautiful,
really fun, fabulous performers. I love all of them. Hopefully, if I'm still in the area, I will be able to make it out. All right, so you can find us on Instagram at NotAnotherQHP. If you would like to reach out to us and recommend films, guests, if you have any thoughts about what we discussed, or you just want to say hey, you can email us at NotAnotherQHP@gmail.com. That's the show for today, and until next time, stay creepy. Not Another Queer Horror Podcast is recorded, edited, and produced by me, Christian Mingle. All of the music used in this episode is produced by Mr. Fulton.